This podcast is proudly supported by iLevel. iLevel's new innovative interactive video platform allows you to showcase your business knowledge. To learn more and view AmCham's interactive video, visit ilevelstudio.com.au/platform.
Hi, this is Duff Watkins, host of the AmCham Business Podcast. You're about to listen to another exciting podcast where we talk to CEOs and politicians and people who are of interest in the world. But you know, you can actually download these in your sleep. That's right. You can subscribe to them through iTunes and a host of applications. So do your brain a favor. Make it easier on yourself. Subscribe to the AmCham Business Podcast. AmCham, bringing business to you.
Welcome to the business podcast of the American Chamber of Commerce in Australia, where you find out how business really works. AmCham podcasts are hosted by Dr. Duff Watkins. Duff is a director of Exec Search International, an author, and is also on the AmCham Council of Governors. AmCham, bringing business to you.
Hello and welcome to the AmCham How Business Really Works podcast. We're coming at you live today from the offices of Twitter Australia. Today we discuss, does your sales message work for or against you? No. Don't be so sure about your answer. Don't answer until you've heard the podcast, because we're going to discuss three things today. Today you'll see how a great pitch or sales message is more important now, more than it's ever been before. Today you'll hear how a poor sales message or a poor pitch can actually deprive you of the clients that you really want to have. And also you'll learn how to structure a winning sales presentation. My name is Duff Watkins. I'm the host of the AmCham Business Podcast. And today our guest is Nathan Williams, who is the managing director of a company called Customer Return. Customer Return is a business set up to help you, large businesses, small businesses, improve their sales message so that you're easier to refer to and people understand your message better. Clients include big international banks like Westpac and American Express, among many others. Nathan, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Duff. Pleased to be here.
Nathan, my first question is, why on earth, why on earth would a big international bank like Westpac or American Express, why would they need your help or anybody's help? They're top standard at delivering their message.
Yeah, sure, Duff.
Aren't they?
Thanks for the question. Interestingly, their challenge, if you will, Duff, as it is for a lot of businesses, is there's a lot that they do. And their particular challenge was they had an area of the bank that was a market leader, and not enough other areas of the bank actually understood enough or as much about their business as they wanted them to. So they had an opportunity to better communicate what that area of the bank did internally and get more cross referrals within the bank. And so they saw that they weren't experts at distilling their message. It was a very technical area. There's a lot that they do, and other people weren't getting the message as clearly as they'd like.
Within their own company.
Exactly. So, you know, there's a lot of leverage within different sized organisations, and obviously the bigger the organisation, the more leverage there is to be had if other departments, other areas, key people understand what it is that area of a particular business does. So it's interesting, whether it's a small business with a couple of people or a really large business with thousands, if you were to do an internal survey, as it were, and ask, what does this particular area, whether it's a bank or another business, do, very few people will give the same consistent, compelling message. And that's a big opportunity lost.
Okay. I know that you've won pitch competitions before, and we were discussing the word pitch. I prefer sales message.
Sure.
What does pitch mean to you? Or what do you mean when you use the word pitch?
Look, there are both what I would call big pitch or message moments, and also smaller pitch or message moments. If I think about the word pitch, it's more of a binary yes or no decision. Is someone going to buy or not? Whereas message can be more of an ongoing conversation where there are different stages in the sales process. But in the broader sense, I would say pitch is any time there's two people communicating with the intent to either sell an idea, sell a product or service, or even a change in the nature of a relationship. So in the broadest terms, we're pitching in our personal lives all the time. It's just that some of us are more aware of it than others. So there's that broad sense of the definition of pitch. But in the business sense, it can be as simple as that answer to, so what do you do? If you've only got, let's say, 20 seconds at an event or a function or over the phone to answer that question, then someone hopefully would then say, tell me more about that. That would be another pitch or another message. Mm-hmm. And then you have a one-on-one meeting or a one-to-many meeting with a couple of people that might go over an hour, for example, and there's some key points and key parts of that message that should be communicated there as well when we're hoping to get a client on board.
So I guess whatever word we use, it's the opening segment of the process that we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. It's certainly the opening segment, but it's also one that should get us to different stages of the sales process. So as we were talking earlier, you know, ideally there's a pitch or a message that you might use, for example, and I'll use the analogy of the elevator, but then also in the hallway, and then ultimately in the boardroom or the meeting room. So it's important to have a message and be prepared for those different opportunities, whereas a lot of people just wing it. It's a bit ad hoc and they hope for the best.
And it's not the same message in the elevator, the hallway, or the boardroom.
No.
They're related, they're linked, but they're not identical. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Because a lot of the times when people get asked, so what do you do, or tell me a bit about your business, they get excited because the other person's showing interest. And so they go off on a tangent for 3 minutes.
And stifle all interest that was ever been, could possibly be engendered, yes.
Yeah, you've had that experience, haven't
you? Yes, yes. In fact, I've done it more than once too.
So the point there is it's important that we don't go off on the tangent too much and we don't ramble and we're conscious of the objective, if you will, of that initial conversation. If someone asks us, so what do you do, is really just to grab their attention in the first 5, 10, 15 seconds and really get them to ask another question or to get to the next part of the conversation. So that, yes, they are linked, but we've got to have different lengths of message for those different opportunities. Yeah.
Nathan, how on earth did you get involved in this line of work? I didn't even know it was a line of work until I met you.
Sure. The short version is customer return initially was doing a lot of work in the client feedback space for professional and financial services firms. And we'd go back to our clients and say, well, this is what clients do really like about your business, and here's some question marks or some areas of concern. And often what the customers or the clients really liked about the business was different to what they were pitching or what they were promoting, what their message was. And so there's a bit of a disconnect there between what they thought was valuable and what the people paying the money thought was valuable. And so this is going to
be... Let me just stop there because that's important.
Yeah.
What the seller thinks is important, what the client values, the ones that are paying the money, what they value, there's a disconnection, there's a discrepancy.
And really important, obviously, for the business to check in with whether it's clients or referral partners and understand what's most valuable to them. And not enough businesses do that. And so there's often that disconnect where a business might go out and spend this time and money promoting a message. They haven't checked in with who's actually using their services and could be using more of their services. And so it doesn't resonate. So they just spend time and money, which to some degree it can be and often is a waste because they haven't got the research behind them. And so that's how it got started. So I would sit in rooms with medium and larger organisations and say, well, you can talk about that, but that's not going to resonate based on the feedback that we've actually delivered for you. And for some of the bigger businesses, we'd have there'd be a marketing agency in the room, and I was sort of playing devil's advocate and saying, well, you can do that, but again, it's not going to work because here's what the clients value or don't. So that was really the background to it. And so from there, from the client feedback space, we started getting into what I thought was the logical next step was actually delivering that advice ourselves on how to best get your message right, get your pitch right, because it was one of the key takeouts that came out of the client feedback. When you looked at the consistency in all the client feedback, you could see some key themes, and they gave some pretty obvious clues as to what the message or messages should be. And so that's how I really got into it from a business point of view, if you like. And then practically as well, I've, as you alluded to earlier, been in and won pitch competitions and coached people to win them and now judge them. And it's great fun. I mean, life is all about communication. Business is all about communication, and I love it.
You mentioned that it's the feedback was obvious to the seller, to the vendor. So my question is, why is it so difficult for us to understand what the client values? I'm speaking from this from personal experience. I think I mentioned to you before. This was a turning point in my career when I realized that 80% of the tried and true and tested and professional method that I felt so proud about, the client couldn't care less. Or they just cared for the 20% that mattered to them. That changed my whole business and also simplified it a great deal. And I learned a valuable lesson, the hard way, of course. So, but why is it so difficult for us to learn that lesson?
I think you've touched on it there, Duff, in the sense that we're attached to what we do, obviously. We're attached to the programs, the services, the products that we have because we've invested time and money in developing them. So a lot's gone into that. We've got a vested interest in what we've developed working, obviously. And so it's tough to hear the feedback that, you know what, people aren't going to buy this, but they'll buy this part. And very few people have what I would say is the both the emotional intelligence, but also the lack of ego, if you will, to say, all right, well, let's forget about that 80%. Let's focus on the 20. Because it's not what I think, it's what the client thinks. They're the one paying the money. They may well need other parts of the 80% after the fact, but if we focus on what's most valuable up front, that's the thing to really be cognizant of. And I don't think a lot of businesses, or enough businesses, I just said then, check in with what is most valuable to their clients. They've got their own head noise, their own narrative about what is and isn't valuable. So it's important to get the feedback and also ask the tough questions and be prepared to change, and not everyone does.
Nathan, you contend that having a good pitch, a great pitch, a great sales message, presentation is more important now than it's ever been. I would contend it's always been pretty important. Why is it more important today?
Sure, I'm not saying it was never important, but
I know.
Look, it's more important than ever before now because there's more competition than ever before. So it's harder for our ideal client to choose us because there is more competition. So there's competition. With that comes clients and consumers that are more time poor than ever. So we need to make it obvious, by the way, that we talk about the problems we solve, the solution we provide, how we position ourselves in the market. Otherwise, consumers get confused and it's too hard. And sometimes our biggest competitor is not our competitor, it's no decision. People often will run with the status quo if there's not a clear, obvious choice that feels right for them. So it's competition, it's time poor consumers or clients. And also I think there's a lot of noise. You know, we now have these leveraged social networks, people are getting more messages than ever thrown at them. And so it's hard to grab their attention. So we need to stand out. We need to be compelling. We need to have a transferable message. Otherwise, we're missing out on some opportunity.
I think you've just described modern society. The consumer, the buyer, is often befuddled by all the stuff coming at them. So therefore, if I understand you correctly, you're saying the onus is on us to be signal instead of noise, instead of static, and to depict ourselves in a way that they, the consumer, the listener, can actually understand, comprehend immediately.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly. And relatability, I think, is the key word there in terms of talking about the problems that you solve in a way that's relatable for our ideal client. Having a list of two or three big relatable problems that early on in the conversation gets their head nodding, so they're saying, right, this business gets it. Because most people, when they have a message or they have a pitch, they tend to focus on their solutions and how credible they are and their expertise, not realizing that that client, yes, they attribute some value to that, but we've got to be an expert in their problems. Because most people will buy to avoid a problem than just get a solution for the heck of it. So we've got to know that market's problems almost better than they do, and that's really key.
Are you suggesting it's not all relationships nowadays in sales?
Relationships, yeah, good question. Always have been, always will be important. I mean, we all know people who are maybe experts at what they do, but if we don't know, like, and trust them, then we have that, I know I probably should buy from them, but I don't want to for whatever reason. Maybe we don't know, like, and trust them enough. And buying's always been, and always will be, partially at least, an emotional process. So relationships always have been, always will be important. But we've got to get our message across in a compelling manner that's transferable and show that we're looking to collaborate with the client as opposed to just sell to them. So collaboration is really important when it comes to selling.
You work with big companies?
Sure.
You work with small companies?
Sure.
That means you've probably seen a lot of errors and mistakes that people make, right?
Sure.
Tell me about them. I want to learn from their mistakes. Tell me the kinds of errors, the kinds of mistakes that you see out there in the market.
Sure. Okay. The first one I alluded to before is often businesses are so wrapped up in what they do in terms of the solution. So you might ask someone, so what do you do? And 3 minutes later, you wish you never asked them because you're hearing the seventh step of their seven-step solution, not realizing that you don't really care about all seven steps. So often businesses are wrapped up in their solution rather than being an expert in the problems. They're not clear enough in the one or two outcomes that they really want to be known for or how they're positioned in the market. So in a competitive market, whether it's consulting, professional, financial services, whatever you're in, there's generally a lot of choice. So how are we positioned? And positioning is simply, who are we or what are we and to whom? And not enough businesses are clear enough on their positioning. And the third one is often that businesses are very logical when they pitch. They're very rational, they're very logical. They talk about their years in business, their expertise, all these sort of credibility points. Mm-hmm. And it's very rational and logical. But as I said, buying's often an emotive or an emotional process to a point. And they don't really expand on that or get into that space because it doesn't feel right for them. They're not used to doing that. And so they're stuck in the left part of the brain, which is the rational, logical part of the brain, without tapping into the emotions. And I think it's incumbent on all of us to tell a bit of our story about perhaps why we got into what it is that we do and why we love what we do, because that's an important part of the message or the sales process as well.
So attending to the emotional needs of the buyer, that's part of a good sales message, a good pitch, a good presentation.
Yeah, absolutely. And part of that is understanding, what are they really trying to get done? I mean, yes, they're talking to you about a certain service, a certain solution, but ultimately, what are they trying to get done and how does your service relate to that? Because too many businesses focus on what they've got and just push that out there without really connecting it with what's the client trying to get done. And maybe they don't need 100% of what we've got. Maybe they just need that 20%. So it's connecting in with that and speaking about it in terms that are real to them. So whenever I put a proposal or a program plan, if you will, together for a client, it's never about exclusively the perfect pitch program or the referral program or the sales program. It's about the outcome that they're trying to get done and modifying it for them. And all businesses will tailor things. I mean, I get that. But often they're not fully aware of what's the number one outcome that the client's after. And what do we absolutely need to do to get that? And the other stuff is just noise.
Reminds me, there are engineers that specialize in effluence. Did you know that? There are engineers specialize in effluence.
Too much.
Yeah. And when they go for a job, it isn't the style and personality. It's like when they get employed, is can you solve this technical problem dealing with sanitation? And it's a very peculiar kind of engineering. In other words, competence matters a lot. Tying this into a lot of salespeople overvalue relationships and relationship building. But at the end of the day, can you solve my problem? Because that's really what I want to hear from you.
Just on that, Duff, I mean, I should point out that for a number of clients, we've actually played, if you like, the independent third party that's had meetings with their prospective and existing referral partners where maybe they've had, I'll use some, old hackneyed analogies here, the games of golf or tennis, and they've had the dinners, they've had the relationship, and they have the relationship, but the referral partners still aren't referring. And so playing the independent third party, talking to those referral partners about why they haven't referred, often comes down to a message or a pitch challenge. They don't understand exactly what the business does, and they don't have a compelling reason to refer that's going to solve their client's problem. So there can be a pitch or a message problem. So it hasn't been communicated well enough about, for example, who to refer, when to refer, why to refer, and process is important as well. They often don't know exactly how to refer, and no one likes to feel silly, so they don't ask the question, and everyone sits on the fence. So it's about message, but also process. Relationships, always important, but if we don't give people those tools and don't make it easy for them to refer, they're not going to do it, at least not in the volumes that we'd like.
So would you suggest to people, this is how you go ask so-and-so for a referral, this is how you generate a referral from your existing clientele? Would you basically coach people on how to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's part of what we do in our Referral Plus program, absolutely. Yeah, it's about how to best have that conversation, when to have it, and to set expectations around that as well. So absolutely, that's a big part of it, because a lot of people have hang-ups about how to best do that. I mean, they look at their client base, they look at their contacts and think, if I was getting one referral per client per year, and maybe one referral per referral partner every, let's say, 3 months, for example, business would look a lot different. Financially, it would be a lot better, and emotionally, it would feel better. There'd be more business coming to me. So everyone wants referrals, but a lot of people have a hang-up about how to best have that conversation and perhaps don't have the strategies and the systems in place that they implement on a regular basis.
It would also be frictionless if it happened as you're describing. It would be so much easier.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to ask you to elaborate on this. Why is it so damn hard for us to understand this? I see a lot of people in business. They're senior people. They're experienced. They all have high school diplomas. They're well-educated. They're smart people. They're experienced. Some are quite worldly, yet everyone seems to have this same problem. I keep wondering, why is it so difficult?
To have a conversation about referrals or sales more broadly?
Just to be better at communicating our value to the world out there.
Yeah, good question. I think the first thing is a lot of us don't get training in this. We go to school, we go to university or some form of college or education or on-the-job training, and we generally focus on how to get better at what we do. Mm-hmm. So the technical aspect of it. And we get very little training in how to best communicate what it is that we do, often until it's too late or been in business for a while, and we wish that we'd had that early from the get-go. I mean, you can go and study 5 years on how to be a lawyer, and knowing quite a few lawyers, there's probably very little, if any, on how to run a practice or how to get a client. until they get into some form of post-grad education. So I think a big part of it is we don't get the training. We focus on the technical and not the business or the commercial enough. So that's a big part of it. Some of the training that we do get or have had in the past, culturally, sometimes it doesn't work as well as it could in Australia, I think. It's not modified for Australia sometimes. It doesn't fit with people's perception of who they are and how they like to have those sales conversations. Mm-hmm. So it feels like they've got to be a different person when mm-hmm. they have a sales conversation. They haven't worked out what's their style and how to best fit their style in with a sales process. And so I think sometimes when there's that disconnect, people just don't do it. Well, they certainly don't feel comfortable about it.
There was a time in my industry, executive search, where marketing consisted of picking up the ringing telephone and answering it and then taking the order, if you were so inclined. But sure. That was a long, long time ago. Sure. And it's pretty much as you described. Every industry that I know of is competitive and fiercely so. So the need for clarity of purpose and clarity of message is increasing. So how do we structure a winning pitch, a winning sales message? What are the proper steps to take?
So if we look at the first pitch or message, if you will, when someone asks us, so what do you do? As I alluded to earlier, if we just talk about solutions, we're going to lose people. So I always like to talk to clients and businesses when I'm doing workshops about working out the big relatable problem that you solve for your market and talking about that. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing that grabs their attention. So I like to have a bit of fun with this. You can appreciate at a meeting or at a networking event, if you will, if someone asks me, so what do you do? I mean, I can have a bit of fun with that because I'll say something along the lines of, well, you know how a lot of people actually struggle to answer that in a compelling way in 20 seconds less that grabs your attention? And they're nodding their head like you are because they're thinking, yep, that's why I asked you that question first. Now, I'm not always going to say it word for word like that. It'll vary a bit depending on how formal or otherwise the situation is. But irrespective, I think it's important to think about what's that big relatable problem that we solve and talk about that and get their head nodding. I mean, that's really important.
The big relatable problem, now elaborate on that. What does that, I want to make sure I understand that.
Sure.
You walk in, you meet this person, prospective client, and you're trying to identify the big relatable problem. How will I know one when I see it?
Well, look, ideally, it's always good if we know a bit about the person and obviously the business that we're talking to before they ask us that question. That's nirvana, if you like, Duff, if mm-hmm. we have that pretext. In terms of the big relatable problem, I'll give you a quick example, if that's all right.
Okay.
So just prior to starting Custom Return in 2010, I wanted to find a niche market. And I kept on picking up the paper, reading things online about financial services. In financial services, at that point in time, we just had the GFC, so the share market was going sideways and down, and that had a few challenges around areas of, I'll call it client engagement, message or value proposition, and also referrals. So they were the three big relatable problems for that industry. They were in 2010, and while there's some regulation and other things that are drawing their attention at the moment, they're still big relatable problems. How to best get the message across, so we've got a great value proposition or a great message. How to get referrals, so that was another one. And also client engagement was another one because of the GFC and mm-hmm. a few other things mm-hmm. that were going on. So I looked at those three things and thought, okay, so they're the three big relatable problems for that industry. And so funnily enough, we have a pitch or a message program. We have one around referrals, which also includes client engagement or client feedback, if you will. And then we also have a program around sales. So the point is we built the programs and built the business around the relatable problems. So find the problems first and then build the solution, whereas mm-hmm. most people tend to do it the other way around.
Yeah. So yeah, you went to direct access to the problem that was most pressing for the customer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Seems pretty bleeding obvious when you say it like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Sort of the tagline for your business, as I understand. Your business is called Customer Return. I figured it out, by the way. Customer return, as in you want return customers, see?
Absolutely.
Figured that out by myself on the train coming in. Okay, so you're trying, the purpose of your business is you want to make it easy to buy from and easy to refer to. So how do you go about accomplishing that?
So in terms of being easy to buy from, I mean, certainly a key thing is making sure there's consistency between the messages both online and offline. So we've all had this situation, I think, where we've had a conversation with someone, they've told us something, and then we've thought, oh, just check them out online. Or go to their LinkedIn profile, for example, whatever it might be. Or go to any number of various social media networks, publications, etc. And if there's inconsistency between the online and the offline, then it's a disconnect and we tend to sort of, it doesn't feel right. It's like a bit of a handbrake. It's pulled on the car.
You discount the message.
It slows everything down. So consistency is important. And having a compelling message that's easy to transfer is also important. And when I say easy to transfer, I often use the example that ideally a message is so simple that an 8-year-old and also an 80-year-old can hear it, get it, and tell someone else about it, whereas often we make it too complicated for people. So yeah, concise, compelling, easy to transfer, consistency between online and offline. And where we've got clients and referral partners, almost getting it down to obviously a tagline, but also a question that they can ask on our behalf that could trigger a referral. Mm-hmm. So I always talk to clients and ask them, what's their referral question? So if I'm sitting in front of your ideal client, what would you love me to ask them that's going to get them thinking, I've got to talk to Duff about this? And most people never have thought about that referral question. We've got all these networks, social media and otherwise, but we've never thought about how to educate our network just to ask a question on our behalf. Whereas most people and most businesses will say, here's my 4-page brochure, here's my website, I'll throw all these messages at people because they're passionate about what they do. But if you don't boil it down to a question or a key point, they're going to drop the ball. They don't want to drop the ball, but it's too hard. They've got their own stuff going on. So we've got to boil it down for people.
Are we talking about dumbing down the message of the company?
Well, I always talk about smartening it down.
Smartening it down, better still.
Simplicity is underrated. So, you know, when there's a choice between complexity and simplicity, always go for simplicity. You know, people are busy. I think we need to assume people are busy. They could be lazy, potentially, but more often than not, they're just busy, and they could be selfish, or they've got their own stuff going on. So we're going to make it really easy for them. So not dumbing it down, but smartening it down. But simplicity works. And big corporates get this. And, you know, really good businesses get this because they've got the tagline, or they've got what advertising agencies refer to as one-word equity. They've got a word that they want to own. So, for example, when Optus came into the market, I think it was very late 80s, early 90s from memory. Telstra, I think Telecom was back then, they were the incumbent. And the point was that, you know, they had a monopoly. And because they had a monopoly, the perception was that their service could be better. And so Optus come into the market, and what's the word that they decide to own? Yes. As in, yes, we can do it. Yes, we're good with service. So, you know, big corporates get it. So they smarten the message down, and they're also quite predatory, if you will, with their positioning. You know, if there's a way that they can stand out that differentiates themselves, they'll take it. You know, we see that with Commonwealth Bank at the moment. Their word is can. They've been structuring their message around for a couple of years now. So, you know, big corporates get it. It's very important to smarten it down and keep it simple.
Is there one takeaway you'd like to leave with our audience before we conclude this podcast today, Nathan?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Duff. Look, I think the key message is, as I mentioned earlier, most businesses and most people focus on getting better at what they do, and that's important, but that's also a ticket to the game. People assume you have a level of competence, and it is an important part of the message. But if we just focus on creating value but don't focus at all on how to best communicate it, it's hard to commercialize our value and get those ideal clients and referral partners that we deserve. So it's important to create value, always will be, but if we can't communicate it in that compelling manner, we're not going to commercialize it. And we've all walked out of meetings at some stage of our business career and thought, I can't believe they didn't buy, or I can't believe they're going with them. And in our head, we're thinking, well, that's their problem. They didn't get it. No, it's up for us for them to get it. So the responsibility's on us to be almost a better marketer, a better communicator of what we do than a doer of what we do.
And we'll finish there on that note today. You've been listening to the Business Podcast of the American Chamber of Commerce in Australia. How Business Really Works. Today, our guest has been Nathan Williams, Managing Director of Customer Return, and we've been discussing your sales message. We value your opinion. If you're listening to us through iTunes, please hit the subscribe button. You can leave a review, make a comment, all of which are very appreciated. We want to know what you want to know. What are the topics, the people, the issues that are of interest to you? Just email us, podcast@amcham.com.au. In fact, you can hear all of the podcasts on the website, amcham.com.au. This is AmCham, bringing business to you. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Business Podcast of the American Chamber of Commerce in Australia. This podcast is proudly supported by Twitter Australia. Twitter connects everyone to what's happening in the world right now, from breaking news and entertainment to sports and other everyday topics. See what's happening in the world live as it unfolds. AmCham, bringing business to you. Ever wondered what goes on behind the scenes at the world's most powerful defense companies and U.S. government agencies? From October 15th to 20th, find out by becoming a delegate to AmCham's Defense and Aerospace Mission to the U.S. To learn more about the mission, visit amcham.com.au.